in life, what is your purpose?
Right now, it's finding those keys.
Welcome to another episode of the Neon Movie Bunker. I'm John Robinson.
And I'm Hilaria Stanek.
And we're here to talk about movies.
And Get Out.
Yes.
Get Out has been tracked for a lot of awards, rightfully so.
Yes.
The movie is spectacular.
Yes.
But the Golden Globes have, in their infinite wisdom...
Well, I don't think the Globes made this decision. I think the producers made this decision.
No. No, they didn't. One of the producers has specifically said, it's not a comedy, it's a documentary.
Yeah, Jordan Peele said that.
Right. No, this was a decision made by the Golden Globes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've made this sort of decision before for the film The Martian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the decision that for their award consideration, the Get Out will be considered as a comedy, not as a drama.
Right. And their thinking on this is really bizarre. Just in general, the way that they break up... I appreciate why it's the tendency towards comedies, as far as awards are concerned, is, brush that off.
Yeah, tend to be overlooked.
Right, which is a shame because comedy is not easy. You know, timing is a particularly sticky thing to do with a pre-recorded medium, but nonetheless, it is believed that they are lesser. However, it's just, yes, there are funny moments in Get Out.
Mostly revolving Lil Rel's character.
Right, but they're... moments. I mean, there are moments in The Exorcist that are funny. Doesn't make it a comedy.
True.
You know? It just strikes me as being really spectacularly tone deaf. Not that that's a first for the Golden Globes.
Yeah. The Globes being the first name in second-rate awards.
Mm-hmm. Really the Radio Shack of award ceremonies.
Yes.
The other bit of news that we have is regarding one of the films we'll be talking about tonight, Justice League.
Yes.
Justice League was on track for an opening weekend of roughly $95 million.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
No, it's not.
Not bad at all. That's a heck of a lot of money, and I'd be very happy to have that in my living room right now. However...
it's not what they were hoping for.
Not at all what they were hoping for. They were hoping for somewhere in the neighborhood of 120. So it's not like they fell all that far. But.
That's a 25% shortfall.
Yeah. Now, I am not going to be overtly foolish and say that Warner Brothers is going to lose money on this film. They're not.
No.
The
when the accountants get a hold of it,
the merchandising,
yeah,
and the home video release and the television rights, eventually the cable rights, all of these things are going to bring in plenty of money. However, when it comes to the pissing match of, you know, whose team got the best box office, still not DC.
Nope.
Which is a shame, because there are things to like about Justice League.
But we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. In the meantime, we have an email address.
We do.
That email address is...
mail@neonmoviebunker.com.
Of course, that's not the only way to get in touch with us. You could always contact us at...
facebook.com/neonmoviebunker.
Or if you prefer Twitter, there is...
@neonmoviebunker.
And John has his own Neon Movie Bunker Twitter.
@JohnNMB.
And I have my own Neon Movie Bunker Twitter. @LRA Neon MB.
Yeah.
So, you know, all sorts of fun can be had. Just drop us a line, let us know what you think. And, of course, be sure to subscribe.
Apple Podcasts, or Google Play, or Stitcher.
Really, anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can find us and listen to us talk about movies and pop culture. Sometimes have special guests on the show as well.
Yes. Subscribe. Get the shows. The shows.
So many shows. So with all that said.
Yes.
Let's hop into it. I've seen it. You've seen it. $95 million worth of other people have seen it.
Yes.
Justice League.
Yes.
Officially directed by Zack Snyder. Written by
Chris Terrio and Joss Whedon.
Mm-hmm. Starring Ben Affleck, Gal Gadot, Henry Cavill, Ezra Buzzington, I believe?
No. Miller.
Miller. Ezra Miller. Boy, would that be a different movie. That would be a very different movie. Let's see here. Jason Momoa.
Ray Fisher.
Ray Fisher. Amy Adams. J.K. Simmons.
The voice of Ciaran Hinds.
Many others.
Yes.
Bruce Wayne is trying to put together a team in order to stop what he feels is an oncoming threat.
Yes.
After having visions of, excuse the term, apocalypse in Batman v Superman.
Yes.
He is fixated with this idea that he needs to make good on his promises to Superman. To protect the people. To be the good in the world, be the change in the world that he wants to see, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Yes.
And he is also dealing with quite a bit of guilt as far as the death of Superman as well. He feels responsible for that.
Yes.
Already signed up on his team, his league, if you will, is Diana Prince,
mm-hmm.
better known as Wonder Woman.
And she is.
And the two of them go about doing a little bit of recruiting. At the same time, a character by the name of Steppenwolf attacks Themyscira.
Yes.
And there he finds the item, one of the three items he's looking for, a mother box. This mother box contains a part of what he calls the Unity. Three boxes that, when lined up and touching each other, wipe out the planet and reform it into the primordial ooze that he's comfortable with.
Yes.
So he gets the one from Themyscira from all of the Amazon warriors. And then he sets out to find the other two. Then we have Bruce attempting to get his team together. He is able to easily convince the Flash.
Yes.
Barry Allen is right on board with that. He's ready to go. Arthur Curry, a little less so.
Yes. Arthur is a bit more truculent.
And, oh, I forget Victor's last name.
Stone.
Victor Stone. Also, not terribly interested. However, circumstances do align that these five characters get together and team up in order to take on Steppenwolf and try to save the day. This is not really a spoiler. They bring back Superman.
Yes.
And
Superman comes back to life.
And joins the League, and together the six of them fight Steppenwolf and his hordes of parademons.
All of these things are true.
Yes. We'll start off with the most obvious statement. This movie is so incredibly uneven.
Yeah.
This movie is almost schizophrenic in its editing. And not in a Michael Bay, oh my god, what am I looking at sort of way. Not in a James Wan, my equilibrium is completely thrown off, where am I sort of way. In a, I've never edited film before, well, this looks like fun sort of way. And that's not the fault of the editors. At least I'm not willing to put it at the feet of entirely at the feet of the editors. I think the fact that we essentially had 1.5 different movies shot is what caused that. That being said, there are elements from, we'll call it the Snyder-esque
the Snyder version, end.
The Snyder end, that I liked, that I thought were really well done and were entertaining. And there were elements from the Whedon end that I liked and thought were really well done and were entertaining. And there were moments from both where I thought, oh my God, if my eyes roll anymore, they will roll right out of my head. The good. Superman.
Yes.
They got Superman right.
For once, yes.
For the first time since the mid-80s, they got Superman right.
Yes. First time since he was co-starring with Richard Pryor.
Yeah. The fact that it took him three movies in to get there is a little unnerving. I do like that they seem to take to heart the criticism that the fans and the critics give them, saying, you know, this Superman is not the heroic, impressive, world's big brother that he's supposed to be.
Yes.
You know, from the first shot of this movie on, that's what Superman is.
Yes.
Which is a little bit retconny and also much needed.
Sorely needed, yeah. Yeah.
Another thing that this gets right, Ben Affleck continues to be really good as Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Gal Gadot is really good as Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Ezra Miller is funny.
Yes, as the Flash.
Mm-hmm. Jason Momoa was not bad.
No.
You know, okay. The actors are okay. Nobody's doing bad work on screen. However, there are certain elements of the writing where there was no good way to deliver it. There's essentially...
There's a lot of exposition.
There's a lot of exposition, and then there also are certain elements where they were going for kind of a light, slightly campy laugh, and it just falls flat. Like, at one point, Batman is confronted by Superman, and Superman says, you don't like me, or something along those lines, and Batman's response is, well, I don't not like, and it's just, really? Really? This late career, Dark Knight, grizzled old man is going to talk like a tween at Superman?
Yeah.
That doesn't fit with the character of Bruce Wayne.
It really does not.
You know, I could see, say, and maybe this is me going out on a limb here, but I could see, say, Tony Stark saying something like that. Because that's kind of...
It's what we've established that Tony Stark is.
Yeah. We've already established that this is not what Bruce Wayne is. I don't think I know of a... Adam West's Batman wouldn't have said that. Let that be your guide. Adam West's Batman wouldn't have said that. The threat here is uninteresting.
Oh, Steppenwolf's so bad.
He's just boring. Yeah. The parademons look cool.
Yeah.
But Steppenwolf, I didn't care.
Why him?
Yeah, it's... We get that you're holding off the big guns for later. You're not bringing Darkseid out right away.
Mm-hmm.
And more power to you, because everybody would be comparing you to Thanos anyways. But Steppenwolf? I mean, Parallax would be a better... Although, then you'd need to bring in the Lantern.
Lanterns.
Which they kind of sort of did anyways.
Mm. Star of the Conqueror. I mean...
Yeah, there are better options. There are just... Brainiac? Brainiac could have worked. All sorts of options that you didn't take, you went with the guy who's going to be confused with the local theater. And then you give him a bland plot. I mean, his story is what? I destroy worlds because that's what I do. I'm the world destroyer. There's no motivation to it other than, hey, this is a planet and I smash those things up. as one-dimensional and flat as a character as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no attempt to give him any more depth.
What'd you think of how it looked?
It looked okay.
It looked like a Zack Snyder movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked okay. It looked like a... It looked like a lesser Zack Snyder movie. There are good Zack Snyder movies. They're all very early in his career. But, yeah, it's okay. The score is worth talking about, though.
Yeah.
There are a couple of interesting tidbits to it. Like, of course, it reuses the Wonder Woman theme.
Yeah.
As well it should.
Yeah, that... It reuses the 1989 Batman theme by mm-hmm. Danny Elfman, who also did the score for this.
And it reuses the John Williams Superman theme.
From 78, yeah.
And I know that there have been some who've complained about that, but I thought that really worked well. It helped tie in these characters to emotions that they haven't really earned yet. You know? The Superman theme in particular. I remember back before Superman Returns, how you said all that the teaser for that needs to be is the Superman shield and a few bars of the John Williams theme.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. That's, if you're going to tease a Superman movie, that's really all you need. And having that score, that bit of music back in there, appearing with the character, worked. Really did. The Batman theme was actually subtle enough in its usage that I was looking for it, so I knew it was there.
Yeah.
I don't think the casual viewer will necessarily lock in on it. It's
an Easter egg.
Right. It'll be one of those things where you kind of, oh yeah, all right, this is a very Batman vibe to it. And that's why.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that these are generally positive things. I think Elfman did a good job mixing in the greatest hits.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there's nothing new here. It's just a really nice mixtape.
There's nothing memorable.
Good point. Yeah, there's nothing memorable. But the highlights of past superhero films are mm-hmm. nice to have played with these icons on the big screen again.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it in 3D, did you?
No, I saw it in IMAX, but not 3D.
Okay. I can see how 3D would be fun with this. It's not one where I'm like, you know, I need to rush out to see a 3D screening of it, like Thor was.
Yeah.
Because there, yeah, that it's a movie made to be in 3D. This is, it's a movie that is also available in 3D.
Yeah, I would rate basically worth everything you said.
It's not bad.
It's not fun bad.
I don't, because there were certain sequences where I was snickering.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that the MacGuffin is called the Mother Box, and in the last DC, well, not the last, but the previous appearance of Superman and Batman, the
yeah.
climax of the film hinged on the whole mother thing. It really kind of, you might get a wee bit Freudian with your interpretations here. The DC superheroes really like their moms. And the supervillains, too, apparently.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, it's... I'm reminded of something I said about Watchmen.
Okay.
It may not be a great movie,
mm-hmm.
but it was the best Watchmen movie we were going to get. I wonder if the same thing can't be said about Justice League.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, especially considering where they were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine, but it's not anything we're going to remember.
No, and I saw the film with my daughter mm-hmm. and some of her friends, and as we left, I asked them, "So, what do you guys think?" They, almost in unison, the three of them said, "Yeah, we like the Avengers more." Almost in unison. So, I mean, it, like John said, it's not outright bad, but there, I can definitely see at some point in the future a really great riff tracks version of this and just phenomenally funny.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
Also in theaters.
Yes, sir.
Is Lady Bird. Written and directed by Greta Gerwig. Stars Saoirse Ronan, Laurie Metcalf, Lucas Hedges, Lois Smith, Tracy Letts, Timothy Chalamet, and others. Picture it. Sacramento. Sicily. Picture it, my fist in your face.
I don't have to picture that. I've experienced that.
Well, picture it, Sacramento, 2002. Christine McPherson, who prefers to be known as Lady Bird, is a high school senior at Immaculate Heart Catholic School for Girls. And is continually butting heads with her mother. They are, the family is, well, the family consists of mother, father, older brother Miguel, Miguel's live-in girlfriend, and Lady Bird. Lady Bird is she's kind of an outsider, has something of a performative streak. She's not, she's trying to navigate her college application experience, and she's probably going to end up going to a state school nearby, but she really wants to apply to big, important liberal arts colleges on the East Coast, which her family probably can't afford, but it's what she wants. The fact that she also probably doesn't have the grades for such things is not as much of a deterrent as it probably should be. The school holds a fall musical and a spring play in association with the boys' school across the street. And she decides, she's pressed to audition, and for Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along. And at the auditions, she sees Danny for the first time. And she is instantly smitten in that way that only 17-year-olds really can be.
Gotcha.
And sets her eyes on Danny, and Danny, in return, reciprocates.
Okay.
He's the star of the show. She's just in the chorus, but they start hanging out, and they, you know. Lady Bird goes to Danny's grandmother's big house for Thanksgiving. Not the big house, but large home. And, you know, basically is seeing how the other half lives, as it were. Then the night of the last performance, Lady Bird discovers something about Danny that she didn't know before. The relationship quickly ends. And afterward, she sees a show by a band from some of the boys at the school, and she sets her eyes on Kyle, the bass player, who's anti-establishment and reads Howard Zinn and says things like, "I haven't lied in 2 years and I only smoke hand-rolled cigarettes." And
are they clove cigarettes?
No, Lady Bird smokes cloves.
Gotcha.
Because that's what she gets from her brother's girlfriend.
Well, of course.
In the meantime, her father's lost his job, but she convinces him to help her with financial aid documents to try and get into one of the East Coast schools, because her mother is absolutely dead set against it, will not allow such a thing to even be considered. And the relationship continues with Kyle. And, something goes wrong there, too. And we're following through the school year. And even though the relationship goes wrong, Kyle agrees to go to prom with her. Even though, in Kyle's words, prom's stupid.
Okay.
And we have an epilogue, and that's the end, and that's where things end up. This movie is Greta Gerwig's. This movie accomplishes two things for Greta Gerwig.
Okay.
Autobiography,
mm-hmm.
and Love Letter to Sacramento.
All right.
A place that Lady Bird on the surface despises, but really.
It's home.
It's home, yeah. Greta Gerwig, best known as Mistress America and Frances Ha, both by Noah Baumbach, and from Greenberg, also by Baumbach. Here, taking the reins full-time. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good movie. It's
wonderful.
It's Saoirse Ronan is terrific as Lady Bird. Laurie Metcalf as her mother is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
This is the kind of role she's never really been able to do on screen, or at least on the film screen. And she knocks it out of the park.
Beautiful.
It's, you know, Lady Bird is a spoiled, self-centered brat,
mm-hmm.
who, by the end of things, realizes that and decides to change.
That is a wonderful twist on the coming of age story, really.
Yeah.
That's that shows actual maturity.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm wired to deal with that. That's wow.
All the supporting characters are there's one scene that feels like a subplot that got dropped.
Okay.
But other than that, all the supporting characters are really well drawn and well performed. Yeah, this is a movie you have to see. It's getting Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress consideration, and I can see why, and it deserves all of it. This is a really great piece of work. It's something I'm probably going to be talking about in December.
Wow. Yeah?
Yeah. Lady Bird in theaters now. See it.
Going from one family drama to another, I also had the chance, pardon me, to sit down and watch the film Bitch. Written, directed, and starring Mariana Palka as Jill Hart. She is the mother of the Hart family. Her husband, Bill, played by Jason Ritter, is a philandering workaholic who is...
Better that than a working philanderholic.
Yeah, I guess. It seems kind of like a six of one, half a dozen of the other sort of situation, but... Okay. he's a working philanderer and a philandering workaholic, and man, yeah. he had me all mixed up there.
Excellent.
So he has barely any time for the kids. Their three kids are Tiffany, Max, and Cindy. And Jill is doing everything she can to keep the family afloat, keep them moving. I mean, yeah, Bill is bringing home a nice paycheck, but there is a hell of a lot more to being a parent or a domestic partner than just providing funds. There's, you know, the moral support, there's getting the kids to school, getting the kids from school to their activities, making sure everybody's fed, making sure that all the bills get paid in a timely manner. All of these different things that go into running a household. And Jill just one day snaps. And when she does, she suddenly takes on the personality of a dog. She barks, she growls, she squats to pee, squats to poo.
Hmm.
Just dog. And Bill comes home to this, finds the kids have trapped their mother in the basement, and he now has to reconnect with his family and now has to deal with all of the things that go into keeping the household running and keeping things going while maintaining his job, while, you know, doing what he was doing with one exception, and also trying to figure out how to bring his wife back from whatever it is that she has gone into. I talked about this a little bit way back when.
Yes.
On the previous program. Not like the previous episode, but the previous program we did.
Yes.
And I said that this movie surprised me. I was expecting it to go to some dark places. And it did. It went to some really dark places, particularly when it comes to a marital relationship that just isn't anymore. However, the movie surprised me with how incredibly hopeful it was. The characters of Bill and actually Jill's sister also, Beth, never give up on her. They never decide, you know what, we're just gonna lock her away and, you know, be done with it. It's as if this whole episode really opens up Bill's eyes to what he had in Jill. And he wants... You can see that this character wants nothing more than to get that back. That is largely through both the writing from Palka and the performance from Jason Ritter. The depth that he gives this character, who would be real easy to dislike. It'd be real easy to look at this character and go, you know what?
Scumbag.
Yeah. But that he doesn't want this to negatively impact his kids. He doesn't want this to be everything that his wife is really admirable and shows a lot more depth and humanity to this character than just making him a scumbag. And that, I think, and that Pelka is, I mean, she goes some really crazy places with her performance. And the word fearless gets thrown around a lot when, you know, particularly when actresses do nude scenes.
Mm-hmm.
However, most of those actresses aren't doing nude scenes in fecal matter and barking like a dog.
Yeah.
Pelka just goes all out with this. She doesn't hold back. This is not a not an easy movie to watch, but ultimately an affirming movie to watch, and is some really impressive work from Pelka and Ritter. If you get the chance to see it, I would say it's definitely worth checking out. It's available on video on demand and in select theaters. And I'd love to see that on a marquee, but that's me.
So, listeners, did you see Justice League, or did you see Lady Bird, or did you see Bitch? Please let us know what you thought. Mail at neonmoviebunker.com.
In the meantime,
DVDs and Blu-rays?
That's right, and coming out this week on DVD is the movie Lemon from earlier this year, starring Judy Greer, Brett Gelman, and many others. It tells the story of a man who's trying to put his... since seems to be a theme this week. A man who's trying to put his life back together after his wife, his long-term girlfriend, leaves.
Okay. Also coming on Blu-ray, and I'm sure DVD,
mm-hmm.
is Good Time.
Ah, yeah.
Robert Pattinson completely breaking away from... what's his name? Edward.
Mm-hmm. Edward Cullen?
Yes.
It's terrifying that I was able to call up that name so fast.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Need to seek help.
It's called having a tween daughter. Yeah, I know.
For those of you who are not in the studio right now, I'm just kind of silently shaking my head.
In my defense, she has also seen Nosferatu and Dracula and tends to prefer those.
But yeah, it's a story of a guy trying to get his brother out of jail in New York, mm-hmm. and some of the steps he has to take to get to try that.
Pretty, I haven't seen the film, but my understanding is that it's kind of visually out there too.
Yes.
So,
yeah,
be fun to see. If you're looking for a catalog title to pop into your Blu-ray player, a couple of good options pop up this week. The first one is Animal Factory, directed by Steven Buscemi.
Ah.
Who, you know, does some interesting work. This is coming us to a coming to us from our friends at Arrow Academy, and from, I guess you'd call it, across the street at their distinguished competition, you have Jabberwocky, coming to us from the Criterion Collection. Both of these films are presented in a beautiful new transfer with all sorts of bonus features and worth checking out.
Cool.
Yeah.
Got anything for us to avoid this week?
You know, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
It sure is.
It really is.
I managed not to see it.
I didn't. I saw it. And I might give it another try, but that's me. I am a, maybe not professional, pro-am. Do not try this at home. If you've seen Valerian once, you've seen it enough. It's just not terribly good.
Alright. Hey, Ellery.
Hey, John.
Let's go to the movies.
Okie dokie. What are we going to go see?
First and most of things this year right now is Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. So much fun.
It's quite good. Just a blast, and it's got Korg.
You know, I like Korg, but I don't know that he is the character that really grabs me in that movie.
It's also got Hulk.
Hulk is pretty damn cool in this one. Probably my favorite use of Hulk.
Next on my list of things to see right now. Let's go with Lady Bird.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a great coming out party for Gerwig. It's mm-hmm. a great part for Ronan. and it's a great part for Laurie Metcalf. And last on the list of things to see right now, probably not in theaters anymore, but still available on Netflix, is the Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected.
Mm-hmm.
Noah Baumbach taking on a family of, well, a family.
Mm-hmm. If you're going to stay home and pop something into your home video player of choice, be it DVD, Blu-ray, streaming, or 4K, let's see here. There is a DVD release this week of Superman and the Mole Men from 1951, one of the old TV serials. Hmm. And I talked about Justice League getting Superman right for once. This series got him right also, and it's kind of fun to look back and see that sort of thing.
Cool.
Let's see here. Speaking of looking back, theatrically it's still out there, Murder on the Orient Express. However, there was a previous version of it, which is now available in a new home video release. Also a hell of a lot of fun. And along with it came two volumes of The Best of Agatha Christie. And I would probably lean to the second volume myself, but that's just my tastes in the stories. Either one is going to do well by you.
All right. Want to take the opportunity to mention our email address one more time, mail@neonmoviebunker.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/neonmoviebunker. We're on Twitter @neonmoviebunker. And I'm @JohnNMB.
And I am LRA NeonMB.
And of course, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts and Google Play and Stitcher. And if you do subscribe, hey, why not leave us a rating?
Mm-hmm. Let us know how we're doing.
Yes. And so we come to the end of another episode of the Neon Movie Bunker. This week's episode is produced by LRA Stanek. The executive producer is Kate Walpole. The junior executive producer is Maggie Stanek. The theme song is by
Dr. Awkward and the Monkey Man Trio.
So until next time, I'm John Robinson.
And I'm LRA Stanek.
And we'll probably see you at the movies.